And 19 minutes past 7 on Monday night, Serena. 20 years ago, writer, photographer and musician Eamon Carr of Horselips fame was sent to Kosovo by Paul Drury, who was then editor of the Herald newspaper. War had been raging in the former Yugoslavia for most of the 1990s, and Eamon's assignment was to report on what he found. As well as interviewing refugees, he took a series of black and white photographs, which are now being shown in public this weekend, and they're being shown for the first time. This is all part of the 2019 Festival of Politics, and the exhibition will be on at Taylor's Hall in Dublin. Going back to that 20 years ago now, Eamon, how fresh is it, or did revisiting these photographs bring it all back up again?
It was a strange one because at the time, to be honest, it was quite traumatic. I mean, I would have gone off, not quite with a skit of a laugh, but, you know, it was an assignment, and away I went. Got myself down to Bari and went over on a ferry to Albania and went on from there. And at that stage, you know, I would have been seeing it on the news and so on, but maybe sometimes people watch the news and things don't really fully register what people are looking at. But at that point, over a million, maybe 1.2, 1.3 million people had been, you know, dispossessed and run out of their homes. And a lot of them were, the ones who weren't dead, a lot of them were wandering around. Some of them were in camps and different camps along the place. And I bumped into so many of them, you didn't have to look very, very far or very hard. And all of the stories were absolutely tragic, and the people were lovely people. And so it was a tough assignment, wrote a lot of stuff about it for the paper. And when, you know, then after a while, you know, you move on. I think a year later, I was reassigned from special reports to sport and wound up going off to cover the World Cup in Japan, which was an easier gig and
for sure
a lot easier and not so traumatic. So the strange thing is that when this idea came up, Owen Scally, who's a young curator, saw the contact sheets and he said, I'd really like to do something with these and we should maybe try and show them and so on. And then I'd been talking to Vinnie McCabe, you know, the producer, about maybe doing something and collaborating in some way, and this all seemed to fall together. But when we started looking at the negatives, you know, you started to re-engage. And
I'd say
it's the faces of the kids and the eyes, the desolation in the eyes, because a lot of these people, you know, they had lost not just their homes, but they'd lost their parents and so on.
Witnessed terrible things.
Shocking stuff. And in fact, I had a wee camera in my bag and I wasn't there to take photographs, but what had happened was a child of about 7 years of age was playing with a gun, a toy gun. And he was sort of pointing it at me and grinning, as much as say, I'll shoot you, you know. And I was, ha ha, I was humouring the kid. Until a lad of about 14 or 15 came over and clipped him on the ear and took the toy gun off him. And it was only then that I realised that it was actually a machine gun, some sort of an automatic thing. And so I said, oh God, and then I could have been shot. And then I thought, hang on a second, the lads won't believe me in the pub. So I took out my little camera and took a photograph of the lad. And then I asked him, could the young lad hold it?
Yeah.
And he let him, but he kept his hand on it.
So in fact, you felt that the image would bring more veracity, would bring more truthfulness or certainly more believability to the stories that you wanted to tell.
I mean, in a weird way, that was almost being flippant. I was almost doing it for myself. But then as I went further into it and I started meeting other people and kids, and I thought, I have to take photographs, I have to be witness to this. I mean, I can speak about it and I can write about it, but I mean, I have a little camera, surely I should take photographs. And I started, and I had a black and white film, 400 ASA, so I took a wide variety of shots and of photographs, and you know, it's all in the images. And I think what happened was I turned up at a refugee camp in the middle of nowhere, essentially, not too far from the border. And there was just a few old men sitting around the place, and I couldn't see any women. The women were all in the stables. They didn't want to come out. They'd been traumatised. They'd been raped. All sorts of horrible. The fathers were either dead or had disappeared or were on the run. And so there was loads of kids, and they came running over because I was a strange face and they didn't know. Sure, I had nothing to give them, you know. And one young lad, asked me to stay. Now, I didn't have his language, he didn't have mine. But I knew what he meant. He ran away and he came back and he unfolded this tatty old road map. And he pointed. And it was a little village. And it was in Cyrillic script as well, by the way, you know, it was of the area of Kosovo. And there was a little village, and he had it ringed, or somebody had ringed it for him in a biro, with a biro. And this was where he was from. And he was saying,
"That's where you're from.
That's where I'm
from. That's where I'm from."
In other words, he had a home and he had lived there. And it's like, I don't belong in this stable with these people.
Yeah, and again, the visual aspect of that and the little ring around the town. There was another thing that you did in the midst of taking the photographs, and I'm wondering how this kind of manifested or suggested it to you. You were taking photographs and lots of photographs of faces, but then at a certain point, I don't know, did you feel you were being voyeuristic or in some way? Because you shift the focus down to the feet, and in themselves, very potent image as well.
No, yes, I went to one of those little frontier border posts, and it was a real old-fashioned one. It wasn't like any sort of high-tech thing. Mm. It was just a barrier. And I was looking down a sort of straight old road, and it was in early in May, and you could see the sort of the heat at that stage was starting. It was like so, and the landscape was a bit like sort of, you know, northern Greece or somewhere you might go on your holidays. And then suddenly figures started to appear, little blobs on the horizon, and they were coming down out of the hills and out from behind rocks and stuff, and where they'd been hiding. And so they came towards, and as they came towards us, I just thought this was like a scene from some sort of apocalyptic movie. So I took a few photos discreetly. But when they came over, I was talking to them, and there was a few people there, aid workers or Red Cross people, sort of bandaging their feet and looking after them and giving them water and so on. And these people were so distraught. They'd been living there for months, some of them, you know, not just living there, but having travelled over the mountains. And,
surviving
and
there.
Just
literally.
Surviving. And as one person said, we ate snow, you know. And so I couldn't bring myself to take a photograph of them. Mm. But I noticed that their shoes, they had left their house, their homes, wearing maybe whatever they were wearing. It could have been like little slip-on loafers or you know, sneakers, but the sneakers are all battered and bruised and broken and everything. And so I just said, holy God. So I just discreetly took a few photographs of their feet because I couldn't bring myself to look down a lens at their faces, you know. Just
you mentioned there the people were eating snow. Was that the title of a book of poetry or a collection? What was that?
No, I just thought it was such a powerful image that it became a sort of a title for a sequence of verses, if you like, that I'd actually sort of written around different episodes. Because so many episodes that over the years, I think possibly to almost exercise it out of my system, I just wrote pieces about it, and I strung a bunch of them together, and it became the people who ate snow. And, there were astonishing stories. Like there was one family, a husband and wife, and they looked to be in their 80s. But in actual fact, I looked at my notes and checked back. The man was 44 years of age, but he'd aged double his age in the period.
The trauma he'd been through.
And the house had been burned down. They'd been driven out by the police, right? Not paramilitary, but the police. They'd been kicked down the road. They had five children. Then the police started shooting at them. So they're off up into the mountains. And he said that they had to ford rivers, freezing rivers and so on. And then one of the kids, who was about 4 years of age or 5 years of age, actually was shot in the arm. The bullet went through his arm. And he lost a lot of blood, and they got some people bandaged him up. He survived. They got him to over the border eventually. And the Red Cross, he had something like three operations on the arm. And so they showed me the arm. So this poignant little photograph of these two parents with the kid, and the kid is holding up his arm and showing me the wound. It's a healed wound, but the other kids weren't there. The other kids were in hospital. I mean, because everybody was living really rough, you know.
And what you've chosen for the exhibition then is 11 of these images. They're quite large then, are they?
Yeah, they are. I can't even be sure of the size. I should know that. But Owen Scally is the curator of this. And we went down to the Gallery of Photography, and Dan down there digitised the negatives and suddenly became really strong digital images. And then you can blow them up to the side of a house if you wish. And Inspirational Arts actually sort of printed them up, and they do a lot of work for the galleries. And they're not 10 by 8s anymore, you know, which is what you would have got years ago, but they're now the big pictures, yeah, you know, yeah, proper big pictures.
I'd say quite striking for that.
Yeah, I mean, some of them initially look as if, they're shots of maybe kids or something, but then when you look at their eyes, you realise that there's something else going on, or even their clothes, you know, whatever, you know.
What about now, Eamon, when you're looking at the television today, and we're not talking about Kosovo, I suppose, to a large extent, the Syrian situation strikes me as quite similar.
Yeah.
Do you see images there that are like mirror images of what you were looking at 20 years ago?
All the time, you know. All the time, and especially lately, you know, it's you know, with the truck, with the Vietnamese people inside, you know, all of that. Suddenly, you're thinking, 20 years on, what's changed? Very little has changed.
What effect does it have on you when those images are so alike and bring you right back?
Well, to be honest about it, I hadn't really sort of been thinking about it, and sometimes you don't necessarily have to engage. People can shut off, and they do, I think. In my case, I probably did. But when I started looking at those images again and the negatives, and we were developing them and thinking about them and digging out the old poems, oddly enough, I started to have sleepless nights. You know, you just sort of wake up, or stuff is in your head, and, you know, little kids, and you wonder what became of them? You know, what became of their lives? Now, I know that Kosovo had a soccer team now and was actually playing England just the other day. And you're sort of thinking a national team. But 20 years ago, they didn't. And you're thinking, wow, I wonder how some of these people survived. And there was one man, I digress now, but there was one guy who I met when I was trying to get out of the place. And I think I was being sussed out. This guy, he looked like a young Clint Eastwood, but again, he had a 1,000-yard stare, and there was an older man with him, and he was sussing me out, and he said, excuse me, you're Irish? I said, yeah. And he said, I have a friend from Belfast. And I said, all right. And his story was astonishing. He'd been working, he'd studied outside Munich in hotel management and catering, and he'd come back to Kosovo, and he'd married a sweetheart. And then one night, his village was surrounded and they were all driven out. And the village was shelled, and they crawled out. He said, we crawled out. And everybody, he had married his wife. They didn't have children. But his wife was killed. His parents were killed. His siblings were killed. And his cousins, all he had left was one uncle. And this wasn't him. The other man wasn't him. But he was KLF at this stage. He was, the Kosovo Army. And he was there basically to greet recruits who were coming in on the next ferry from Canada and America and wherever and around Europe. And, I mean, when he realised that I was kosher, I suppose, he had a good old chat with me. And he made his political point, and he basically called for NATO had been bombing on their behalf for about 3 months, I think, at that stage, but he was calling for heavier bombardments. So I mean, it just swings.
What's amazing is horrendous. Talking to you now, it's as if you were out there last week. It's clearly so fresh, and possibly
oddly enough,
looking at these images again brings it all back up. Crossing Borders is the title of the exhibition, Traversing Foreign Cultures for Safety, and it's taking place in Taylor's
Hall. It's in Taylor's Hall on Thursday afternoon. I mean, the festival politics this year is astonishing. I mean, there's a wide variety of stuff on. And I mean, some of the stuff that just caught my eye, I mean, political football from Pinochet to prawn sandwiches. I mean, that's on Saturday afternoon.
Pinochet to prawn sandwiches, that's quite a trip.
That's a nice one. And the idea of that was Jesus Christ, a political superstar. I mean, Patsy McGarry and other people are discussing that as well.
Right.
So there's a wide variety of events.
Well, people can find out details of your event and indeed everything else. Yours is at 3 p.m. Thursday the 21st as part of the Festival of Politics, and full details of everything at the festival on festivalofpolitics.ie.